All right, good morning, everybody. I'll call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, July 10th, 2018, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you. Good morning. As always, we start with public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda or topics not on today's agenda, if you prefer. Come right on up to the microphone, anybody wishing to do so. And seeing no one getting up, we'll go to agency reports, and we've got Friendship Arc Homes annual report. Jennifer Ellis is here to talk to us today. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's your knee? I see your knee brace.
Well, I had about 8 milliliters of fluid drained off of it yesterday, so I have to keep it compressed for 48 hours, but it's feeling a whole lot better than it was.
Good. Outstanding.
Yeah. So thank you for having me this morning. Friendship Arc and Community Services continues our mission. Celebrating the uniqueness of adults with intellectual disabilities, we provide homes and community services, and we help our core members reach their fullest potential through faith, family, and friendship. And rather than reading the report that you all got, I'll just highlight a few things. Obviously, completing the construction on our fifth home in October was a huge highlight for us. It was great. The construction went smoothly. There were no issues, no hiccups. And we were able to move people in. We started October 16th was when the first core member moved in, and by November 1st we had all five in there. And it's going very well. One of the unique partnerships we were able to do is we furnished the entire community space of that home through Habitat Store. So it was really nice to be able to get great furniture from them and be able to support their mission as well. So that was kind of a unique thing we were able to do with this house. The five individuals are doing great. They settled right in. They're a part of the Friendship Arc family, and it's wonderful to be able to take people off of our waiting list. Unfortunately, our waiting list continues to grow. There's still a lot of need. I think we're sitting right around 21 that are looking for 24-hour placement in our homes. So there's a lot of need out there, but we've got to finish paying off the mortgage on this newest home before we start anything else. We also have our supported community living program, which actually developed out of one of our core members not needing 24-hour care. She was ready to kind of go to the next level, so we started that program in 2015, and we now have 12 individuals that are living in their own apartments, and we're serving them hourly, which can be every day for a couple of hours to maybe just once a week to get them kind of the grocery store and stuff. So they're very independent, love having their own place, not as many rules, I should say, when you live with other people. But it's going well, and it's great to see them flourish and be independent. And then we have our Day Hab program, which has really grown. We started with 17 in 2015. We're up to 40. Continue to have referrals for that program. It's unique in that there's no building. A lot of people are used to Day Habs that show up at a building. Ours is completely community-based, so we pick them up at their homes, either one-on-one if they need that level of support, or in a smaller group, maybe three or four individuals. And we obviously have suggestions of what they could do, but we ask them when we pick them up, what do you want to do today? Do you want to do what's on the schedule, or is there something else that interests you? So it's really driven by the core members and what they enjoy and what they want to do. And like I said, that's continued to grow, and we get referrals for that program as well. So we're seeing a lot of growth. We employ about 75 right now and keep adding to that. And like everybody else in Story County, we're short-staffed, but we're doing pretty well. We're serving 45 individuals total in all of our programs, so it's going well. We're even surviving managed care.
Good.
That was my question.
There's the first thing Hiccup says that any provider will tell you. When you have a completely different system change like that, it's gonna wreak a little havoc on things. But we have a great person who does all of our billing, and she stays on top of that. And we fare a lot better than some providers in getting paid. When a claim doesn't get paid correctly, she jumps right on it and works with our provider reps looking at NCOs, and we've been able to not think we're any further than 30 days behind in any payments.
Are you starting to feel more consistency coming out of them? I mean, clearly there were hiccups early on.
I would love to say yes. I think the hiccups have just changed a little bit. We used to have complete claims denied. Now we have claims that pay at a lower rate. And it's not our fault. It's just, I don't know if there's an algorithm that they have or how they decide what claims are going to get not paid correctly, but we usually have three or four that we have to go back and resubmit and go through that process. And we do finally get paid. We've seen probably at least the biggest impact to our core members is really the change in case managers. There's been a lot of moving between the NCOs, and you know, for years they would have the same case manager who really knew them, knew their needs, and that's not the case today. There are a lot of great case managers out there. I don't want to take away from that, but it's definitely a change in what we were used to.
Absolutely. Question.
She just spoke to what I was going to ask her about. Is I'm the board rep on the mental health region, and we saw the beta test that the state did with the MCOs and the Medicaid disposition or dispersals, and I'm glad to see that you're getting to where I think we should have started.
Mm-hmm.
And I only hope that it continues to get better, and there's not the glitches, and you're not getting held up on. And we hear the story on the mental health side of things, why the restitution is always at a reduced rate, or they don't always come back with a good story.
Exactly.
So I am not surprised, but I am sorry for you that that's the case too.
Yeah. It's definitely more administrative work on our side to get paid than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we don't really get reimbursed for that administration. So that's been a challenge.
Absolutely. Laura, question?
No. Thank you.
So my wife, Callie, served on the Friendship Arc home board a few years ago and got to see firsthand. I mean, not community gets to see what great work you're doing out there, but they've got to see firsthand what a great organization is. So thank you for taking this on, and thank you for what you do for our community.
Please thank her for her service on our board.
Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen. Next, we get to hear from University Community Child Care, our friend Penny Pepper. Penny?
Good morning.
Thanks for coming over this morning.
Good morning. Before it gets too much time. Hopefully the children are getting outside this morning.
Yeah, they may not be getting out at lunchtime. Yeah, that's right.
Well, some of you may know, but others are new. We are a private nonprofit on the north side of the ISU campus, just across from Vinker Golf Course. And we provide full day and part day early care and education services for infants, toddlers, and preschool all year. And then during the school year, we do after school care for children that are bused in from various schools. In the summertime, they are there all day. And also during the school year, we provide care for mildly ill children at the comfort zone, which is unique to the area, but also the state. There are only maybe two, possibly three providers that do that. But anyway, thank you for your support for that. We have, at any given time, between 90 and 100 children that we take care of, and they're cared for by 24 permanent teachers, two registered nurses, food program staff, office staff, the assistant director, and myself, the executive director. We also have 25 to 30 university students working for us as assistant teachers, and the benefit from that is huge to the program, but also financially, because most of them are covered by the paid by the college work study program. So we pay 25% of their hourly rate, which is why we can have 25 to 30 of them at one time. We receive funding from the asset funders from ISU. They provide both monetary funding and in-kind services. Our building is rent-free. Air conditioning and full HVAC system, one of them broke down last week. They are replacing it. Thank goodness for that. The ISU Department of Residence provides funding to cover some of the occupancy expenses like moving, solar, that kind of thing. This money doesn't come directly it goes to parents. It's through the ISU Campus Grant Program, which is a federally funded program through the Department of Education to support students going to school, and it pays 60% of their monthly child care costs, and we have 33 children using that in fiscal year 16-17. And then we have money from the USDA, which supports about half of our food budget, which is huge. And the last one I'm going to mention is our partnership with the Ames Community School District to to be working with them on the four-year-old statewide preschool program, which means that families participating in that get 10 hours of free preschool care a week. And in the year cited, we had 15 children. I think we just finished up in May 13th. We've got 12 so far for next year. So it's pretty consistently in that range. Overall, in 2016-17, we cared for 225 children, 104 were ISU student families, 105 were Ames residents, 7 were specific Story County residents, and we had 9 living outside. One of them was a staff child at the center, and the other were ISU staff using the comfort zone services. Our client income levels, we had 48% below 200% of poverty. So that accounts for the student families using us. And on the lowest of the low, 35% of that were below 150%. So the lowest of the low, but they are temporarily low income as long as their educational goals are met. So that's the positive spin there. A total of 66 children had their fees paid by DHS, the ISU Campus Grant, Boost Empowerment. We also gave money for preschool scholarships there, and the Voluntary Preschool Fund. So that's a big percentage of our student families, too. I have a few strengths I'd like to mention. We have had accreditation from the National Association for the Education of Young Children since 2000, and we renewed in 2016 for 5 more years. We also have had a 5-star rating on the Iowa Quality Rating Scale since 2014. And we're just getting hopefully renewed for another 2 years. We had a review 2 weeks ago, and we're just waiting to hear back. Other than the impact on the child care, meaning that we need even more quality standards, when you have a 4 or 5 rating on the fee scale, you get a higher rate of reimbursement from the DHS. For those families participating in that's really helpful. Another strength I'd like to share is the continuing education that our staff get on the smaller level through the Iowa Child Care Resource and Referral on 2 to 4 hour training sessions. But we also have staff participating in something called TEACH, which is a scholarship program to help people working full-time in child care get their education, and the scholarship pays for the tuition. So I have 2 people that are graduates of this program with their associate's degree working with us. Another is in the associate's degree program now, and I have 2 pursuing their bachelor's degree. So this is all a major contributor to our quality and their educational benefit. In light of the difficulty in hiring people, we started offering people with 2 years' experience but not necessarily educational experience to work for us, with the promise then that we would help sponsor them through the TEACH program to get at least their child development associate credential, which is 12 ECE college credits. And then if they chose, they could springboard into their associate's degree. We have 1 person working for us now that came in under that, and so I'm hoping that will attract more people. The last strength I'd like to share is that out of the 20 for permanent staff, we've got 3 that have worked for us 2 to 5 years, 4 that worked 5 to 10 years, and we have 7 who have worked over 10 years, and some considerably over 10 years. So all of these things that I mentioned, our strengths, are definitely major contributors to the quality of care.
So that means 10 of your permanent staff are in their first year?
10 are, well, yeah.
Are in their first year.
Under 2.
Under 2 years.
Under.
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
I'm sure to retain.
100%. I just want to make sure I'm understanding. Absolutely.
But yes. I'm one of the ones that's greater than 10 years, and in fact, I'm going to be retired from this position in fall.
I don't think we've approved that yet.
Okay, don't. No. I've been there since 1975. I think I've hit my time. The weaknesses that we have are fairly consistent from year to year. We always have a pretty lengthy waiting list for infants and toddlers because there's limited space available. We can only provide care for 12, and when we have 100 to 150 on the list at least at one time, it's very slow going and discouraging. And then the difficulty hiring full-time employees has really hit us hard the last year and a half. And then the last difficulty is balancing the affordability for families with the ability to pay staff. We typically do, you know, 2 to 3% more to parents, 2% to staff, trying to balance things that way. Plus, you know, whatever ever happens with our first funders. The highest wage that we pay to a teacher when they're new is about $26,500. Ideally, they have an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree, so we have to keep plugging away at this little by little to try to do a little bit of the right thing. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate the help with that great deal. I do have a few quotes from parents. I always like to share a few of these with their testimonials to what you all do for us. It helps that I don't have to constantly worry about where I get the money to pay for child care like I have in the past. I can focus more and have more time dedicated to studying. Access to the lowest rates for ISU students is very helpful because spending a lot of money for child care is difficult with our income. The lowest rate really helps to manage our needs and expenses. And then I have a couple specifically from parents using the comfort zone. It reduced my stress and gave me the comfort of knowing my child's needs were being taken care of. I can't express in words. It's amazing. Great service with wonderful people. A lot of these folks are here with no family support and not much alternative for caring for their children when they're sick. So once they discover us and use the service, they really appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
Could you tell me how you mentioned it earlier, Penny, what an ISU C Campus grant is?
It just got renewed for October 2018 for 4 more years. So it's a 4-year grant ISU gets from the Federal Department of Education.
And they just pass it to you?
Well, I have to bill the parents what their rate is. They should pay their copay, and then I bill an ISU office to get reimbursed for the 60%. So it doesn't go directly to families, and I have to work a little bit to get it, but it's great.
Okay.
And it's just going to be under $1 million a year for the next 4 years, so it's a significant amount of money, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't believe you're telling us you're retiring. Is this the last time we get to see you?
I kind of hope so.
Well, thank you for everything you've done, and it is a great program. It is. I know that when we talk to people about moving to Story County and they have young families, UGC constantly comes up. And you're right, the frustration with trying to get the infants and toddlers in is a very real thing, and it's bigger and broader than just UGC. But you guys are a great demonstration of what I like to think of, or what I don't like to think of. What I think of is kind of a daycare desert here in Story County, especially for the younger kids. And it's something we've got to go to work on. But thank you for the role you play in all of it.
Well, I should say it's a little bit costly, even at the low end.
Yep.
Student families are paying $800 a month for care. And at the high end, families are paying $1,400. So, and that's what it actually costs for the care. It's $1,400, $1,420. I can't remember exactly. So thank goodness for the ISU Campus Grant and some of those other things, because that's what helps the students be able to support that.
Hope, are you going to be attending the July 18th discussion? Okay, great. Yeah, okay.
You're good.
Good
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Jennifer, you're welcome to say, but I don't feel like you have to.
Okay. Right.
Next is consideration of minutes for July 3rd.
So moved as presented.
Second.
Motion is second. Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions as listed, board.
As presented.
Oh, second. Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Aye.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims for the 12th.
Move as presented.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda, board.
I'd like to pull item 10, please. And that, those are the economic development contracts and the workforce contract expenses.
Yeah, right, and that's acknowledgement of those, but
correct.
We're pulling for
acknowledgement.
Discussion.
Correct.
And so then can I have a motion with that?
Yes, I move that we approve the consent agenda as presented with the exception of items of item 10.
Second.
Motion is second. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Item 10 is acknowledged receipt of fiscal year 2018 expenses for economic development planning and workforce development submitted by the Ames Economic Development Commission. Morris.
I asked to pull this because I noticed that there may be a question by some members of the public if they look at the Story County workforce contract expenses. So I contacted Brendan Dreyer, and Brendan's here to come up just very briefly to talk. But I did happen to know that on the workforce contract expenses, the amount is more than the $25,000 we put in. And so I thought that some members of the public might be interested in determining how exactly those expenses are done and how full that thing was.
I think it's a great question. I think really important for the public to know that this is not a program that's 100% funded by government. We take in our money, but the private sector takes in funding. And I would imagine that Amy Howard is the right person for us to talk to with the ABC in this. But what can you tell us, Brenda?
No, thanks for your question. And again, Amy in our office prepared the report. She actually is on vacation until later this week, and so rather than not speak to the exact specifics, we're on two different fiscal years, the county and our offices. Actually, as you look back at the expenses that have been submitted, most all of that other revenue comes from the private sector. So I want to make sure that when we provide that to you that it's correct and accurate. And what we have suggested back is that we're scheduled to do a report to you all coming up in August, and I can't remember the exact date, Shelley, but I feel comfortable telling you, why don't we provide that detail, both looking back and then as we look forward into the current fiscal year we just started, how those dollars are looking towards the current year, because we've enhanced our contributions into that particular programming, and I think it's a good opportunity to share how we've grown that and some of the things that we plan to do with the additional funds from all of our sources. So.
Perfect. More acceptable if they provide.
Very acceptable. So I would move that we acknowledge receipt of the expense, 2018 expenses for economic development planning and workforce development.
Second.
Motion is second. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, Morris. Thanks, Brenda. Next, turn the page. No public hearing items, so we are now to additional items. And first is consideration of sending the FY19 budget amendment to publication for public hearing on 7/31/18. So we are 10 days in to FY19 and we're amending our budget. Come on, Markley.
Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. Good morning. Yeah, a couple major things that we need. Well, actually, out of the amendment of $2.3 million that I'm requesting, 85% of those projects carried forward.
Right. So things we didn't finish in FY18, but were budgeted in FY18 that now carry forward to FY19.
Right. We've got, obviously, the animal control building. We have the two buildings of secondary roads. Karen's like, we're not quite done with those yet. We're still paying on them. Some equipment and machinery from conservation that they approved for last year. You guys approved at the end of the fiscal and they didn't get it purchased. The remodeling of the Hazel roof home. So I have 275 in here and then 256 from the region for reimbursement. So almost offsets each other. The other big thing is health. So basically 85% of this request is for carried forward. Darren and I have had a brief conversation about his construction budget. There's some construction dollars, but he feels comfortable that we can wait till the end of the, we can wait till later in the year to see how he's doing on those and whether he needs to amend dollars in right away or for that or not. And then there's a couple other items that I didn't include in this until more discussion is held, and I think we can probably get by until we can amend it later.
Yep. I wish we, you know, how many times did we amend the 18 budget?
Three.
Six? Oh, three. Okay.
Three.
Just felt like six.
Yeah,
like we were seeing you every week.
Because then we appropriated those funds after we amended,
really,
right?
Yeah. Really three is about all we've been amended. That's okay. We'll do a six. We'll do a six.
So it's just important to note that these are dollars that were part of the FY18 budget that did not get expended. There were projects we were working on or items that we were in process of purchasing that didn't get all the way purchased. And so it's just a shift forward of those dollars into FY19. Fair?
Correct. So if what will happen is we'll actually have the discussion in the public hearing on the last day of July, July 31st. I'll send this to publication as it is, if it's okay with you guys.
Yep. Questions or a motion to go ahead and send this to publication?
I move sending this budget amendment to publication for public hearing on the 31st of July.
I second.
Motion second. Further discussion?
I just, in comment about that you practice through now from sitting up here, to realize that the budget is constantly moving targets. And so, yes, I mean, if you look to now at this amendment, if our expenses would exceed our revenues, but we know that our fund balance grew quite a bit, right?
More than we, I mean, we're over
more than
million.
Yeah, right. So it is a moving target.
Well, and I think it's a great point, Morris. It's why I believe it's so important that we budget appropriately, which for me appropriately is a balanced budget, right? Budgeting to spend equal to or less than you're bringing in, because it is always changing, and there are always moving parts. And when you budget, I mean, for example, when I first sat down this chair, Story County was in the middle of a budget that had like $5.4 million more in expenditures than in revenues. Now, can you imagine trying to make decisions like that if that's the budget you were working from? Whereas we're working from budgets that balance. Makes it a lot easier to be able to shift things around when you need to.
Thanks. And thank you, Lisa, for all the times you've explained it.
Absolutely. Yeah. We need to vote. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Please send it to publication. Thanks, Lisa. We'll see you in a minute. Discussion and consideration of window replacement costs at McFarland Park. This is a budget item, and Joby's going to talk to us about it.
Good morning.
Good morning. Morning.
Yes, this is a budgeted item, but we didn't have a lot of time to look at the windows prior to doing budgets. So when we had initially discussed doing roughly half of the windows, and then upon further investigation, I recommend full replacement of all the windows.
So what do we put in the budget to do?
24.
We put 24 in, okay.
Because they're all, every one of them's got bad seals in it. And then with all the rains we've had this spring, summer, we've got some that actually need water that weren't part of the plan to do in FY19. So,
okay.
Went out and got some numbers. They're a little on the confusing side.
Mm-hmm.
Lowe's is a total cost. Installation, all materials included in that. And then the beta lumber one is just for windows, and then additional costs with repair pipe for installation, and that includes all like extra lumber is in those installation costs. But Lowe's is our, I recommend it's all windows, quality window, and they're their lower cost option.
But to go with this, we would have to commit to putting an additional roughly $24,000 in to get both halves done. Can we save something in labor by doing, I mean, clearly we need them.
Yeah, we do. And then, you know, with anything, the material costs go up the longer you put it off. And then you get a little bit better labor rate doing the quantity at the time. And then plus, The cost, the Lowe's cost doesn't include our 5% discount we get at the point of purchase on just material. So you're looking at a couple of $1,000s off of that $47,000 total cost once we commit to it.
Okay.
And if, because it was confusing to me, if you could help me walk through a little bit of the Lowe's quote, Dan, is the Lowe's quote does include all the labor also, correct?
Yep.
But are they willing to, if our staff does some of the labor, are they willing to bring that down?
If we looked into that, and you know, it's mentioned briefly on that back page.
Right.
What we started to run into was putting the warranty on the window itself. If we install them in-house because we're a commercial operation. So.
Plus that, we got plenty on your staff's plate, as I see.
I understand that. Yeah. I was.
So if we did any of the installation in-house, we wouldn't be able to do it in FY19. Just don't have the time at this point. Committed to other projects.
But speaking of time, with approval, how long would it take to order the windows and get them in?
It takes about 30 days to physically get the windows in, and then about 2 weeks for installation. If we were to, but we'd have to coordinate that with everything that happens out there in the park. So,
what is our risk if we had another week of bad storms? Okay, lots of water. Would there be risk of additional damage to the building?
Potentially, we run into is when we got a driving wind on that west facing side of the building. Those are the ones that. It's a straight down rain, it's not a big problem. If we got wind associated with it coming out of the northwest, then drag it interior. And it's leaking interior of the wall and coming out of the floor. So it's hard to dry out. That's the potential for it.
Well, I was out there last night and I spent a couple extra minutes just walking around. It's absolutely time to get those windows replaced. I recognize that it's an additional almost $24,000 that we'd be talking about. My suggestion is that we take Joby's recommendation, we go ahead and approve the Lowe's bid, and we operate at this point without putting an additional $24,000 in the budget with the understanding that when we get into the winter and spring, we're going to take a look at your budget and we're going to understand that this is $24,000 of unexpected costs.
We may have to amend.
It's in concentration, okay.
Now, these bids are only good for 30 days. I think you need to know.
Yep. Questions for Joby, or if not, is there a
budget? Talking about this is budgeting. This is something we need to do. And I'm going to
move. Windows are almost 30 years old.
Yeah.
I have no consideration of the replacement cost of McFarland Park as budgeted.
And I
agree. And which one are you going with?
I'm going with the Lowe's.
Okay.
Bid.
Yep.
I second.
Motion in a second. Further discussion?
None.
Kitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. So we've approved the Lowe's bid. Joby, let's get them ordered.
Will do.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, Joby.
Thanks.
Next item is discussion and direction regarding timeline and proposed amendments to the urban renewal plan. So Leanne Hart.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Leanne.
Before you this morning is specific for Cisco Environmental Learning Corridor, the phase three part of the project. So I think final phase as far as this process goes. I've been before you 2 years down the road, so it's about as familiar, but it just is a draft timeline. If you give me some feedback today, then I'll be back next week with some draft changes to the plan, and then we go from there. Ultimately, we have loan agreement and everything finalized by middle of November. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
No questions for Leanne?
None.
Okay. So I would take a motion offering Leanne direction.
I move that we approve this timeline and follow it.
Second.
Motion
and
a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. You have direction, Leanne. Thanks.
Next item is consideration of a letter from the Board of Supervisors clarifying Supervisor Olson's proposed housing program, and this was me that put it on, so I'll kick it off. I think I would start right up top. And Morris and I actually had this conversation before. This is not intended at all in any way to suggest that anybody's done anything wrong or inappropriate or anything like that. It just acknowledges that there is some very real confusion out in the community right now. I know I've received multiple calls from entities that you've presented to, and from all I've not seen you present, but I believe and trust that you're doing a great job drawing the line between Supervisor Olson presenting something and the county or the Board of Supervisors presenting something. But that doesn't alleviate the reality that some people are hearing that this is a county initiative, right. This is a county program. So I drafted what I call a memorandum of clarification regarding Supervisor Olson's proposed housing pilot program. In an effort to clear up any confusion about Story County's official position on Supervisor Morris Olson's recent community presentations seeking feedback on a housing proposal she is currently developing, we, the Story County Board of Supervisors, offer the following information. Bullet one, the Story County Board of Supervisors has not taken any position on this proposal. Bullet two, there's no money in the budget to support any such program. Bullet three, no county resources have been allocated to develop this proposal. And bullet number four, there is no county committee or formal work group looking into this for the county. New paragraph. The county currently funds the Story County Housing Trust Fund Board and believes that any new housing initiative should come from or at least flow through that board. Supervisor Marty Chitty is the county representative on the Story County Housing Trust Fund Board. While we fully support the right of any member of the Board of Supervisors to pursue and or develop any initiative or program as they see fit, it's important to separate the wishes and desires of one supervisor from the perceived support of the county. We hope this clears up any confusion regarding these presentations or the county's position on this matter. As always, please reach out to any of the three of us anytime you have questions. This memo was approved, or potentially was approved, by the Board of Supervisors on July 10, 2018. And then my suggestion is that we would send this to every city council and Morris, anybody else that you made presentations to. I know that a writer for the Nevada Journal and the Ames Trib did an article on this. I'd like to get in her hands because there were a couple areas in there that weren't probably phrased quite right. I think this clarifies.
Right.
Thoughts?
Sure. The majority of this, the vast majority of it, I really like the wording on it. It's very factual. It goes right along with where we've been all time. Okay. My biggest concern is in, I guess it's the second paragraph, okay, where it says, and believes that any new housing initiatives should come from or at least flow through the board. My concern is that we're setting policy here, that in saying that we believe that is we've never had a formal discussion at the board table about really what would be our thought when it came to people bringing us housing initiatives or us doing it ourselves. So I'd like to ask, first of all, at least flow through that board. Can you help me understand how you visualize that? Because I can take it two ways.
Sure. Well, absolutely. So the first thing I would say is I do believe we've had a conversation. I don't believe this is policy. I don't believe it's a policy statement or it would, in fact, rise to the level of any kind of policy. But I think we had this conversation when we talked about funding the Housing Trust Fund Board.
Mm-hmm.
And if I recall my numbers correctly, the request from us based on population of the county was $4,500.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to also pay for, I think it's an additional $4,500, for the smallest towns in Story County.
Right.
So we had a situation where the Story County Housing Trust Fund Board was getting funded by the county, and the county was picking up the portion for our smallest towns.
Mm-hmm.
Huxley, Story City, Nevada, and Ames were all kicking in on their own in order to meet the thresholds. And part of that conversation is why would we fund something if we didn't expect that they were going to offer some kind of opinion or expertise on the matter we were funding them? So I think we did, in fact, go down the road of expecting
And you were highly involved in the formation of the Housing Trust Fund Board. I think we did go down the road of expecting that the ideas on housing for Story County would come from or at least flow through. And when it's flowed through, it means that I think there's going to be all kinds of great ideas that's going to come from all kinds of places. But that ought to me, that Story County Housing Trust Fund Board ought to be the filter where every one of those starts, and then we aren't bound by what they recommend, but it starts and flows through there, much like it does with our Planning and Zoning Commission. They aren't a policy-making board. They're a recommending board. And I'm in the Story County Housing Trust Fund Board. If we're talking about a county program or additional county dollars, they don't get to make that decision. They get to recommend to us on any decision.
Okay. And so, all right, good, because it's better than when the second way that I thought it could read through.
And
all right.
How was that?
Well, one was very strict about, boy, I tell you what, if the housing board, they've got to be the first ones that it be pitched to, or if they don't take it on, if they don't like it, then we've lost any option to act independently. That's how I took it.
The first part of what you said, I believe, so let's say somebody, say a citizen comes and sits down in front of us and says, hey, I've got this great new housing initiative, and all I need is $50,000 from the county to go do this initiative. My first question is going to be, have you talked to the Housing Trust Fund Board yet? Have you been to see them yet? Because if you haven't, that's who you ought to start talking to. It doesn't preclude you from being able to come to us, but the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to ask that Housing Trust Fund Board, well, what are your thoughts on this? Do we have any competing programs? Are there other initiatives that you're looking at? And I think that's where we ought to get some of the expertise that we need to be able to make any informed decision we would make.
I like that. Okay, then we are on the same wavelength here, exactly. Okay, because since you said it doesn't preclude it, and it is with, like, since I did present to them, and I'm waiting to get their feedback back, and a lot of other groups still just, I'm looking for feedback. That's
sure.
It. Okay, in that case, I would ask that we add, now, with that definition of at least flow through that board, with us knowing that we still retain opportunity to take independent action,
absolutely,
I'm good with this paragraph as it stands.
Well, so you've known me a long time.
Right.
Both sitting in that chair and sitting out in the audience. Have you ever seen me do anything that would take away authority from the Board of Supervisors?
No, and that is why I did write a substitute wording, but we couldn't talk about it. So, okay. So, and then down in the next paragraph, I would like, if we could substitute the phrase, the wishes and desires, with it just deleting the wishes and desires and putting in the priorities. So it would be to separate the priorities of one supervisor rather than the wishes and desires. I think wishes and desires conveys, I'm trying to work on an initiative and a priority, and that's still the priorities of me as one supervisor, or you guys down the road, you bring us something, Marty brings us something. It's a priority, I would hope, rather than the less dismissive term or broader term of wishes and desires. So I'm asking that it read, it is important to separate the priorities of one supervisor from the perceived support of the county.
I don't know, it reads very benign to me because I don't think there's any dismissive quality about it, because it's just a portion of what I believe is just a clarifying statement. I mean, I'll go back to what Rick said in the sense that we had a discussion on where we were going to go as a board, as is permanently or presently impaneled, when we did the appointment of the Housing Trust Fund member, me.
Okay.
And we had portion dollars in fiscal year 17, 18, and it's 19. So we're doing something. And you see that happening as we're going forward. You came to us with the stated desire to take a parallel tracked in going to the respective communities and saying, this is what I want to present. You vetted your mind.
I want to find out.
That's what you want to do. You were taking the temperature, engaging a response in individual communities. It's a work in progress. Watch you do it last night in hearing.
Right.
We're not there yet, but forward to when it comes back. But I guess I even, because here's how I look at that. I look at it, if this were something I were doing, I don't think I would, it does rise to the level I would say that would offend me. And I use that Iowa nice
interpretation, but I don't think that's what it was meant to. I don't read it as such, and I don't think anybody would say, oh, this is Laura's just out there on fire.
Okay, so in the future, when you're out there and you're vetting something, and I come back and say, well, it's your wishes and your desires,
yeah,
you're good with that.
If I'm out there counting I'm doing a traffic count on a gravel road, mm-hmm, and hopes to come back to you to move it to a pavement discussion in hopes of moving into our 5-year plan, it would be a wish or it would be a desire.
Okay. Rick?
Yeah, so I'm good with that. For me, when I thought this through, and we're trying to find the right words there, I didn't want to put anything in there that felt like it gave it any weight at all beyond is one supervisor, and I think Marty's right, any of us, you know, I'm an idea guy. I like to go out and push ideas, but the reality is, until such time as the board starts to weigh in, it's a wish or a desire. It's not a priority. Once it's a priority,
well, is it a priority of me though, of one supervisor? Because I'm taking the clause in its entirety. Okay, the wishes and desires of one supervisor, as opposed to the priorities of one supervisor.
Well, this is a statement coming from the board, in the sense that this is what the board collectively perceives what is happening here.
Okay. Since it sounds like we're going to stay with the wishes and desires, it will be interesting to hear feedback from the community about some.
I'm at right this point because you have made an effort.
I'm at feedback from some possible members of the community about the use of that phrase as being appearing to be dismissive.
I'm prepared not to do that 1,000.
So it's not intended to be dismissive at all. I mean, clearly these are. You wish and desire that we would develop the housing program. It is clearly a priority for you, but I don't think that means it's a priority for the Board of Supervisors, and so I don't want anything that muddies that up is my only issue there. Okay, further discussion.
Do you have anything else that
I don't,
rises to the level it gives you?
No, I don't took care of my concerns.
Good.
Have you, I would say, what I have been getting back from several elected people that you're representing, mm-hmm, to is they always want to know, well, where is this in relation to the housing trust fund? Because, mm-hmm, as you've spoken in some communities that have taken up on the granting, mm-hmm, side of things, it's just like, well, what is this in addition to that? And
right,
so you have to then, in turn, you have to say, well, this is more kind of gauging where your community is at as far as what you want to do. You said it well, I thought, last night, okay, in Zerion, is the fact that, you know, as you learn to talk about housing, every community has their own desires of what they want to see done. Every community uses terms that are not transferring to other communities.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be, you know, agile enough to realize that when you step into a community, what they want might be what you have the opportunity to do or get.
And everywhere we go, it's about housing, but there's no consistency. So you heard pretty much my boilerplate the last night, Marty, right? You've heard it twice now, yeah. And, yeah, it is. And so I'm glad people are talking about it. I'm glad that they realize that at least we're taking multiple attempts. I don't mention the actual housing needs study because that's Leanne and Brenda are working with that. I'm going to be working with the Story County Economic Development. So I stay away from that unless I get a direct question about that, you know. And so at least I've heard, you know, afterwards that people are saying, oh, generating conversations. I believe Nevada had a workshop last night on it. So moving forward, wherever the feedback ends up, is more information to throw into the mix. And, you know, and as I said before at the table, I support the Story County Housing Trust Fund, and I've just tried really hard to make them understand that is not this program at all. It is, you know, so good. Thank you for acknowledging I am.
No, that's you're doing it as a work in progress. I'm
Boring
what you get back from, you know, because you're trying to get the solicitations back from the presentation, and then the material provided, I suspect you're going to get some. I look forward to seeing what it is.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm good with the letter then.
Good. All right. So then the motion would be from somebody, if we're going ahead with this, is approving this memorandum of clarification and an expectation that we would ask staff to send it to all city councils, the Housing Trust Fund Board, the Ames Crib and the Nevada Journal, because I know Marlis wrote the article,
right.
But I don't want to just focus in
right.
there. And then, Morris, I would just ask that you provide us with any other. I know I got a phone call the other night from somebody that is heavily involved with the Emergency Residence Project.
Right.
Just with some questions.
Right.
I don't know who else you've been seeing.
So far, you've got the list, but I've got reach outs, though, to several other entities asking would their board complete this or whatever. So, from that standpoint, I can just send it along as part of the package for the people that are still have to get that. So, yeah. So, I will make a motion.
Okay.
All right. So I move that we approve this memo as presented, and that we see to it that staff we get it out to all of the people who have already received presentations, and that it be included with my other two documents that I send to the people who I'm still working with to go ahead and solicit feedback from. Is that specific enough?
I think it's good.
Okay.
Motion to second. Further discussion?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, everybody. Departmental reports is next. This is the engineering quarterly report. Derek, first thing I want to know is how was Norway?
Yeah.
Or Sweden or wherever.
Denmark and Sweden.
Okay.
Stockholm and Copenhagen. It was great. Wonderful.
How was the soccer?
Soccer was... I'm a big soccer fan, so that was great to combine the trip and soccer.
Well, if we're going to get major rain events anytime you leave town, we're going to talk about whether you need to leave town anymore.
When I committed the trip, I had to commit over 9 months ago. The two things I didn't know was going to happen despite playing was my assistant would be on family leave, and my superintendent would be on military leave. So it was not a good time for the flood to hit.
Well, as always, you should feel really, really good about your staff because it was truly all hands on deck, and I think above and beyond, based on the damage that was out there, above and beyond in our response.
Fortunately, our crews are pretty experienced.
Yeah.
And so they didn't have any issues, so it was more on the administrative side. Get as many pictures and stuff as we can for documentation.
That's right. This happened last time you came, didn't it?
We can't get this out of place soon enough.
Maybe put for next week's agenda that credit card payment for the right? But I think we should approve the package first, right?
Yeah.
I know. So.
Yeah.
Got a lot of photos I'd like to show you.
Absolutely. Shelly will get it figured out. Or she'll throw the computer across the room. One of the two.
Either one will be an event.
It was surprising today to turn the computer on and see you have a road closed because of flooding. I think we haven't had any rain for a while. They're down by Maxwell, north of Maxwell.
Oh, sure. About bridge issues.
Did we lose any bridges or do we anything? I hate to get ahead of your presentation, but just... I'll wait.
He's curious.
I'll wait.
Oh, I'm coming. No major... No major issues that we can't take care of fairly quickly.
Okay.
No structural issues, mostly erosion.
Okay.
It's not shutting up, you guys.
Was that two Christmases ago or three that she had to do a bridge? All of a sudden because you had that blizzard that turned into a thunderstorm.
No, it's on. Bridge. We can't get it to.
Well, we were desperate all
yeah, we can't get it to. No, we can't get this system to come on.
Got one.
Oh, right there, right in the eighth
floor. Well, mine,
right? Yeah. I mean, it was just.
Is it on there too?
Lisa, maybe want to go first while we get this figured out?
If board doesn't have a problem, let's have Lisa Barkley.
Yeah,
we'll come back to Darren if we get a computer operational.
Wait.
Hold on.
There we go.
Woo! Sorry.
Lisa, this takes you get up. You can have to attend. These are computers.
Wow. Barclay's coming.
Okay, there we go.
All right.
All right. Okay, first I just, we're having a pretty good year. I just wanted to show a couple pics of what we were doing on the maintenance side of things before the flooding. This is one bridge over on Boone County line. We had some major erosion here. We have some tubes coming down that we put for drainage in it over time. About 10 years ago, created some very large ravines on both sides. There was also a pier that needed some work. And there you see we put an encasement around that. Picture of us putting the riprap underneath there and fixing some erosion. Typical stuff we do. This is the bridge over South Dakota. It's a culvert. Shows up with a small hole again on top of the road, and the landowner stuffed this out there to warn traffic until we got out there with our signs. But the culvert was quite deep, 12 to 15 foot deep, so when you look in that hole, you saw something you could fit a car in. The top of the box culvert was completely gone. I've never seen one quite this bad.
Huh.
That's the top of the box culvert. The steel's still there. The culvert just disappeared. So we had a huge hole that kind of shows the depth of it. Our rubber tire excavator, we're right at the limits of what he can do for an excavation with that because he can't track down too far. But Steve John did a great job with his limitations and getting this replaced with a 42-inch pipe and then the finished product there.
That looks good.
Guardrail damage. People hit guardrails from time to time. This is one on Cameron School Road that got hit. So we got that fixed. And we had one just last week over by Iron Cross on Lincoln Way. You can kind of see the path that this vehicle took.
Wow.
They didn't take the turn and went straight off down. They took a couple hundred feet of the cable guardrail out. So that's probably going to have to be a contract job. We'll wait for the accident report. Hopefully this will be something insurance will pay for, but we'll have to pay for it up front. Now I'm going to get into the floods and the storms. We had about four storms that impacted us. The first two were probably outside of the dates that we're looking for reimbursement for, and this was the first one. This is our Story City shed. We had the wind damage. This took our rubber membrane roof off of that shed with the winds. Actually, we had a vehicle parked here that actually dented the vehicle and some of it fell on it. Just taking the roof off, and then we were getting some water damage, so we quickly had to get a new roof put on, so we had a new rubber roof put on the Story City shed at this point. We got that done quickly. Same area, Story City, a lot of signs just bent over the steel post. I've never seen it quite like this. You go a mile down the road and signs are bent the opposite direction, so we had doing some strange things up there. And then the buildings in the area were damaged pretty heavily. And then
that was the next era
building. Large transmission lines here. They had a long stretch just out of Story City that was taken. I can see all the utility vehicles out there repairing that. The next storm was fairly isolated, but it was over here in Sherman Township. Had a 7-inch isolated rain. Washed some roads out, gravel in the ditch. But the biggest thing was the corn stalks. Just plugged a lot of the culverts in the area, so not much we can do with those other than dig them and haul them away and pile them somewhere. Another picture of the corn stalks plugging culverts. That brings me to the last two storms. Right now, this is kind of where we stand with water over the road and flood damage. The Stars, about 300 locations. This is kind of the first event. Hit more in this area, and the last one was most severe, hit more in this area down here. Like I said, about 300 locations, 7 bridges, and 3 culverts had some erosion issues. This is from the first one. This is over by Fernald. I wanted to point this one out. We're concerned what happened because it never happened in this location before. We come to realize the landowner had built a couple hundred foot long berm and directed all the flow out to the road and caused this erosion. So this is something we have to work that landowner on to get that berm out. But this is why we always are reluctant to do any changes to the master portion base because it usually impacts our roads eventually at some point. So we'll be working with that landlord to get those burners removed. This is Timber Road, kind of down by Kelly. Another unique circumstance, there's no ditch in between the house and the road, so it washed a lot of gravel out in their front yard. You can see a bunch ran down. So they work with their insurance company, and we really don't want to get outside of our right of way to help with cleanup, one, for liability reasons, and two, we don't have the right equipment to do it, so we might tear it up more. So he was agreeable to that. He just turned it into his insurance. This was his backyard. A lot of erosion. He didn't lose his bridge, but he's got an underground swimming pool back here that has damage to it. And a lot of flows coming through here. Fortunately, a lot of it's in the floodplain. That's why you don't build in the floodplain. Wow. Getting into some of the bridge damage. This is the Sandhill Trail. Large stuck holes that go underneath the back wall. This is most of our bridge damage, something like this. Unfortunately, almost all these bridges are in our five-year program for replacement, so if FEMA does declare us, we may not get reimbursed for these, but we're going to try. Again, more of those holes next to bridges. It's probably a good time to point out, too, I've seen some proposals come in recently. I think Mike, I don't know if he sent it to you yet, but he's proposing we do a lot of more bottomless culverts and stuff. I'm going to be opposed to that because this is what happens. It eventually gets deep enough where it sucks it out and creates a lot of dangerous situations with holes. So that's why we put a lot of concrete box culverts with floors to prevent this from happening when we get those big floods.
And to clarify, you just need Mike or the Mike Hop?
Mike. Okay. Well, so the presentation that we just received talked a lot about aquatic life and flow of water, and what it showed is instead of the hard concrete surface that has minimal flow a lot of the time, it showed more of a natural stream running through there. And so that's just conversation. I mean, we've got to recognize that it's a balancing act.
There's a lot of cases where we can do that, but I don't want it to be a blanket policy.
Correct.
This was a strange one too. We didn't even know there was a box culvert here, but it exposed an old box culvert that was just buried, and it opened up. It wasn't flooding. Big head wall underneath the road. More flood damage. A couple of them, like this one, 280th Street. This is the Skunk River Bridge going back to the Ames Treatment Facility back here. So this was already closed, which helped. And same with West 190th, Squaw Valley, and over that road. It's hard to see in the picture, but it washed the rock up in this area. We played it smooth, but we probably won't be replacing that rock, and we're going to be moving that closure back up into this area, and this whole stretch will be
right. So we're standing, and this picture's taken from the bridge that we closed, or thereabouts.
The bridge is up here.
Okay, so
looking at the base of the
east.
Okay. Yep.
And there's no residence down there or anything?
Not in between those two things.
Yeah, okay.
Right behind you there is a couple houses.
Okay.
And then we have the Grant bike path. I just wanted to point this out for a couple reasons. One, this was the day before we had our ribbon cutting for the bike path. And this is all drained by tile intakes. The farmer has a large intake out here, and that tile comes, and we have an intake right here. We've got pipes going under the bike path. But there's going to be times when this water gets high enough, it's going to go over that bike path in the area. We tried to balance the farmer's needs with the road needs, and all these corn stalks started plugging things up. So we have heard from him. He's concerned. He should not have any issues. It should drain like it always has, as long as this intake out here stays open. If this one gets plugged with corn stalks, there is a backup, fortunately. That helps. We're just going to have to watch this over the next couple of years. If we do need to raise this, the water on the second one got almost up to the pavement level, so we'd have to raise it quite a high grade, and we have to buy considerably more land from the farmer, and it's probably going to be opposed to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see what comes. I think this is hopefully abnormal. this picture with the water over it. And then the latest flood, a lot of water over the roads. This is what those look like. This one is 305th Street down south. We're meeting with these residents, I believe, next Monday. They have concern. I'm not sure how we're going to be able to help them. This area floods more than most, and it spits full of water, and it's drained similar to Grant, just an intake drainage district. I don't know what a solution is, but we're going to go out and listen to if they have any ideas. Ditching to another area, changing the natural course of drainage really isn't an option, but we'll see.
You're saying it's not an option because of the topography of the land or the cost?
Well, it's actually illegal to change the natural course. You're dumping the water on somebody else that doesn't get it naturally, so you really can't do that.
Thank you.
This is just more rock in the ditch, and the ones we have in the rock in the ditch, FEMA usually doesn't have a problem if we get to that level. It's the ones where the water just washes all the fines off and it needs rock, but there's nothing in the ditch. We're going to apply for everything, but we'll see what we can get.
Right.
Are you going to try to recover any of that rock?
It's usually got all the fines washed out of it, so it's clean rock, and then it's usually mixed with mud. It washes all the rock fine, but then the mud comes into it, so it's usually a mess to put back on the road. So,
okay.
You know, try to use it for backfill somewhere else where we need it, but putting it back on the road, that usually doesn't work. This is down by Isaac Walton. Shooting range up the hill, washed that shoulder out pretty good. And then bridge damage, this is by 50th, just south of Ames and Ken Merrill. Washed under the back wall again, so we put the fabric and did take some planks off. So we got the planks replaced. Couple issues on 675th. It's a mile and a half stretch, I think, down closer to Maxwell. One of the bigger fills we're going to have to put back and undercut the pipe, so we'll probably have to relay this pipe to get a good base under it again. And then just up the road, two more culverts had some pretty good erosion. Pavements, a lot of shoulder washouts, nothing that's going to be real costly to replace, and anything on the federal aid route, which is most of our pavements, aren't eligible for FEMA. It's a different program, and at this point, the state hasn't reached the level where we qualify yet, but we're trying to get to that point.
Yep. Go back to that last culvert. So, down right there. Yeah. So, it seems to me that we had, and I don't know if it was this one or not, but we had one of these in our five-year program and then took it back out down there. I just remember the little V walls.
Yeah, that's coming. That's also on 675th. I thought it was right after this, but yeah, we'll get to that one.
Okay.
More rock washed off the road. This is the one. The issue here is you see nothing's running through the culvert, but there's a lot of water coming downstream, so it's all going underneath. I think it's about 3 foot deep. It's going underneath the culvert, so it's coming off the bottom. At this point, it's closed. Until the water goes down enough, we can do some more investigation, see if it's scouring out underneath where the road might collapse. We can investigate far enough, but yeah, this is one that has such a high skew, it was going to be much more costly to replace, so we pulled it out of the program last year, so it's not currently in the five-year program, which might help with FEMA.
Right.
So we'll apply and see if we can get this replaced with some assistance. More pictures. Also down by Isaac Walton League, another bridge kind of overwashed out.
I have a question. Can you go back to the Isaac Walton one? That's one of the ones I went to take a look at this Sunday after the Thursday event. And off to the right of the screen, there is a metal sheeting that goes about 4 feet high. Marty, it's the photo I told you because I took a photo of this. And then the water was pouring over the metal sheeting. Is that a natural drainage ditch there? Or
it's a private structure. I think the NRCS helps on those sometimes. So the farmer doesn't continue to lose his land upstream. It kind of controls the land from the road further, and they usually have a power outlet coming through.
Was, and that was built up almost to the top. It looked like the land, and so it is. Okay, thank you.
This is the actual Isaac Walton Bridge that we call it, in between the two shooting range drives, and it always catches debris. And it's one of our first bridges always flood. We actually designed this for replacement about 15 years ago, and it turned out because of the floodplain and the floodplain regs that it'd be about a 600 foot long bridge to replace. It'd be the longest bridge in the county, and it doesn't get much traffic. So this is on that list of bridges that probably get closed someday. And it did actually pop up some planks and damage the bridge more than it usually does. So it's getting closer and closer to that closure stage. more damage, erosion. Marty mentioned the road closure map. We just have a few left on here. These are our projects. That one is our bridge project. That's just the West 190 closure. We do have that 550 at the back open already. That's the Scumbag Bridge closure. That's still closed. This is where most of our damage was. They're slowly getting open. That's one that doesn't show up on here, got added this morning, is that 675th. That'll probably stay closed a while, so the water goes down to check that bridge out. Just to wrap up the flood discussion, like I mentioned, Tyler was on attorney leave, but extra thanks to him. He did come out the past 2 weeks when I was gone. He came into work and July 1st that night. I think he put in a 16-hour day. And payroll was interesting this morning. We hit the end of the fiscal year, and we go into where we get out of our union contract rules and go in more of the handbook rules. And once you know it, we worked overnight that night. So we're working with two sets of rules on one work day. We rarely work overnight like that, but we were out from like 8 p.m. All night, putting up road closures. So that was on hold. Into July 1st.
And thank you to the crews who did that.
Construction, well, let's go to rock hauling first. Our spring rock hauling contract. This is the blue lines show what we hauled limestone to it. And what I mentioned before, this is the first time this part of the county has really seen full contract haul limestone. And I've had a lot of good comments from that. You have one individual north of Lincoln Way here that stood out in the road and blocked the trucks, and we just went around him for now. That's happened before, and it's not the case, but we'll address that. There are a lot of good comments, and even the area we had the Sherman flooding, that individual had just put dust control down the day before and washed the entire rock off the road, but he was so happy to have good rock on the road. He's like, I don't care, I'll put the dust control back myself. I'm just so happy to have good rock out here. Don't worry about it. We did add some more in this. We had a little extra money to add back in. We did actually contract haul a little bit north of here, too, and then we filled in the rest with our local trucks. Wanted to touch real quick on crack sealing. I know Marty had one comment from the crack sealing this year. A bit of a change we're doing now, so I want to make you aware in case you get more comments. This is our typical crack sealing. They come in and route. It's about a half inch to an inch wide, and they fill that joint. These are our transverse joints, and they do a lot of expansion and contraction in the summer and winter. And they fill that with a good amount of material because that's got to stretch and stay together and stuck to the outside, and it's a pretty clean joint. What we're doing more now is because we're seeing a new type of deterioration, these cracks going up the wheel path, and that's in a lot of our cold-in-place recycle, which we started about 20 years ago. It's not all bad, it's just a different type of deterioration. But to address those cracks, they can't really route them, and there's not that big of a need because they don't contract and expand like these do. These just need to be filled, and the cracks are really jagged, and there's a lot of them next to each other, so they just try to fill it, and then they kind of squeak it out. It doesn't look as nice, I'll give you that, but after a year, the blackness fades, and you don't see it so much. But that's why you're seeing a difference now, and you'll see the surrounding counties are doing the same thing. I want to point that out, why it looks different. It's not that they did a bad job. That's what they're supposed to be doing. And at the close-up, you can see the water sitting there. When it does rain, it catches the water, so it doesn't soak down in there. And then in the winter, it'll freeze and really expand and destroy our pavements. And then another thing we do a lot of is the slurry seal. When we get those really rough joints, this is between McCallburg and Story City. So we got that done in June. there is a small stretch left in the town of Carlsberg they're coming back for. They said it would be in July, so we're hoping to get that done through town as well. A couple of equipment issues I wanted to bring up speed on. One, we had an engine failure in a motor grader. These things are kind of finicky. All that happened was a fuel pump malfunction, and what it sends metal through the engine and it destroys the entire engine. It's a typical thing that can happen. It's a small thing, and it can cause a lot of damage. Fortunately, this is the first generation we switched to the 7-year warranty. So we're on the last year of that 7-year warranty. This is the 2012. This is one of our two spares. This is covered under warranty, and it's additionally good because now apparently the transmission's having issues. So we're talking possible $50,000 of repairs here that we won't have to pay for, thankfully. But first time I've seen Cat come out to the site and lift the engine out. Usually they haul the entire piece of equipment in, but they just come and pick it out and brought it back. So it is repaired. We did have an incident with a truck on Oakwood Road, south of Ames, that hit a utility overhead line. You can kind of see the top where he caught it. It caused damage to the top of the box here and bent it up, and our legs won't fit in there, so we're going to have to get that fixed. It's about $1,700 damage there. Fortunately, nobody was hurt. The box...
How was the utility line hanging that low?
Well, it was an operator error, unfortunately.
Oh.
Two things happen. This happens from time to time. One, it either malfunctions and doesn't come all the way down, and the operator doesn't notice it, or the operator gets a phone call and forgets he didn't put the box down.
Okay.
I think that's what happened in this case. And lastly, we've got the truck and pump combinations now. Unfortunately, this happened in the quarry when he was pulling out. It came loose from the truck. Could have been a bad situation on the highway.
Yeah.
A lot of these trucks and pumps that come out of that quarry, so I don't know what happened. The weld just completely came loose. So they have fixed that, and we're working with them to make sure our other one's fine as well.
Well, we're inspecting all of our other ones. Just
Moving on to construction projects, we had 7 this summer planned. It's hard to see those yellow dots, but this one here is the first bridge, and that is completed. Should be open today. Nothing else has really started. University south of Ames was scheduled to start 2-3 weeks ago, but all rains. Fortunately, it didn't start, and then if we would have got all those rains on, it would have made a huge mess. So they're talking about moving in Wednesday now again to close University.
How long is it going to take, whether if that's not a conveyor?
It'll be 2-3 months.
Okay. We need to get going then and ramp it up.
Late start date is in the next week, I believe, so they need to start moving in one way or another. Other than that, Sand Hill Trail Bridge, that's the same contractor as the one that completed the one up here, but they're moving out to a bridge in the middle, so they'll be back closer to the fall for the same trail bridge. Moving on to a couple pictures of the one we do have completed up in Lincoln Township. Driving the pile, decking, all the steels in place, and that's the finished product up there. Turned out good. Working on plans for 6 bridge replacements in FY19 and starting the survey and design on 13th Street. And I did want to comment, we did meet with City of Nevada on 13th Street to get their thoughts and see how much they're going to cooperate. They sounded agreeable to participating in this portion and paving some of this portion. And it's kind of a mutual agreement. We decided it's probably best to split the project right here, do this one first, and then if this is all going to happen one time, to do it at once and not have to pave up to here. We have it currently in the program to go up to here, but the way that thought it was best, and so do we, if we probably do the first phase here and then move through. But we can discuss that more when we have time.
And they indicated that they would work on their portion of 600 coming up to attach to that as well. Is that right?
They would work on this, and we'll design this for them, all our design owners, but this they have to design on their own.
But are they paying when you say they will go ahead and pave that just west, that segment that's west of 600 then?
We'll tie it into our project. Since it's far in the market, we can let it together. This one we're going to try to tie it to our project so we can get the same bid and better prices and do it all at the same time.
But Laura's question, I believe, is they'll pay their share, and the answer is yes, they'll pay their share.
Okay.
We got a little bridge in there, don't we, Tim?
We
just passed all those there.
Yes, right here we have a bridge. Yep. Moving on to the 280s Skunk River Bridge closure, just a quick update on that. This, I showed you the pictures of us repairing it. We did go back after our bridge inspectors came out and reviewed it. We did make an extra bracket to hold that tighter. We've got the decking fixed in the middle, and we placed all this riprap, thankfully, before all the flooding came, so we protected all the work we did. And we've got the weight limit tonnage posted out there already. We just haven't opened it yet. We made it simpler. We usually have the triple truck posting. We wanted to make this as simple as possible. 8 tons, all vehicles. There should be no confusion on what can go over this bridge. The city would also like to see maybe a cable going over the top to do a height restriction. I told them that probably wouldn't be allowed because the federal government gets involved on how we post our bridges, and that's kind of artificially creating a problem. They don't like to see that. That their idea would restrict more trucks going over it, but we'll work with them on that. But I think this is clear. In the past, whenever somebody's damaged a bridge and it's went to court, the judge almost always throws out the damage claim because they say that sign is so confusing, I can't figure it out. It is confusing, and when we get situations like that, it's much more straightforward just to put 8 tons for all vehicles. It limits it a little bit more, but I think it's worth it.
So when you talk about a long-term agreement, who's going to be talking about that from our side?
The county attorney's been working with the city on that for over 6 months, and I haven't heard much movement at all. So we're kind of at the point where the bridge could be open soon. So we're at that point that we open it, or we continue negotiations.
I think it's a good question, Marty. So I know, Rick, you had indicated at one point you had said something to Steve Shanker about it, the city
sure,
manager.
But it rests with their city attorney and our civil attorney.
Okay,
right, I mean, ultimately, we'll have to agree from the county side.
Correct.
City council would have to agree from the city side, but right now it rests with the two legal counsels. I would just, I'm reluctant to open this thing before we have any kind of agreement that says, here's your alternative. You're more than 8 tons, and you need to get over there. Here's how you would do it. And we don't have that agreement in place yet.
That's kind of where I'm standing. We almost had an issue. I'll sit this next picture. This is the city's private road. It has a very large triple box over, and it got completely flooded with one of the storms. So they almost lost the road. And if that was the case, we might have had to expedite the opening of our bridges to get them access, but that didn't happen. They're well aware of this, they're going to get this cleaned out. But beyond that, yeah, I think we can wait a little bit longer, but I don't want to drag on.
Well, so I would suggest, and I don't know if the board should have any role in this at this point, but Darren, I would suggest that that you make sure that Ethan knows that we're to the point that we're prepared to open that for regular vehicular traffic, right? That's cars and pickup trucks. And anything really beyond that needs to not be on this bridge. But before we do that, we need to have that agreement in place with the city of Ames on how those bigger vehicles will access that area. And then I need to go one step further. I think that as we open this bridge, I think it's going to be important that we take an extra step of communicating with the landowners on the other side and just let them know, hey, this is only 8 tons. That's your car and your pickup, and really not a whole lot more.
The more and more I keep learning more, that I think most of the ag vehicles are using this private road. And Ames is saying that they've really been using it for a long time anyway. So I don't know why it would be a big deal.
Okay.
And I agree with Rick in that it's especially since we I think got very lucky in you finding you did a lot of hard work, that was our luck, okay, to find an alternate fix that saved us quite a bit of money.
Right, but let's not call this a fix. This is okay. This because this bridge is nowhere near how it was originally right. designed, and it's not the kind of bridge we would ever build. This is simply a way to allow the smaller day-to-day traffic that goes back to the water plant that route. And we could do that because Darren was, like you say, really creative in finding a way to do it. But I'm reluctant to even really refer to this thing as a bridge. This is kind of
I can say, what happens when a big flood comes and it does damage it more, and it needs to be closed, and then we're without an agreement. Now is the time to take care of that.
Yeah.
So, and where I was headed in the reach out to the landowners, the farming landowners, is to emphasize whatever we call it, whether it be a fix or a temporary issue, that they really understand how delicate it is.
I'll move on to new shed construction. We are pretty much at completion on both sheds. This is a picture of the rolling shed. It is completed. Turned out really nice. I don't have a picture of the completed Kelly shed, but it looks the same as that, just a little bit bigger. Point out that the drainage issue here, this dumpster was kind of our water level indicator as we watched it go up and down with City of Kelly. And except I was out there almost on a daily basis. I was concerned about the City of Kelly draining and if the tile was damaged or plugged in some way. Every time we had a break of a day or two, it was going down, so I had fairly good confidence the tile was working. If I didn't see it move, I would have had a big concern. So it continued to move down. Now, we had a couple issues in the ditch. I'll show you some pictures of tile blockages. This was the first one. This is the district tile that comes through. They did not know they damaged it when they installed our sanitary sewer down the line until they backfilled it and it collapsed a little bit. This is our sanitary. The city just put a new water line in as well. That supplied a little water to City Kelly. And we're right up next to the road with ours, so it made our repairs much more difficult. But they went and got new tile underneath. This is our sanitary. It was about a foot or two below, so they did not see the district tile when they repaired it. But when they backfilled it, you know, it was all the old clay tile. Doesn't take much to collapse that thing.
Right.
So they actually repaired this at their expense. The next one down the road in front of Finch's building down here, we did not know that tile was a private tile. We didn't know it was there, so they had damaged that one as well. And this one became a bigger issue because it was so wet, and they needed to... The elevation of the tile was at the same elevation as our sanitary, and you couldn't move either one, so that was... conundrum. We decided to build a box structure so the water could drop in the box and fill back up and go out the other side. It's really the only way you can do it. The contractor had to get this dewatered so they could pour concrete. So they built this temporary structure. And I think previous photos you could see are Steve Colton, Alger, and Finch are helped us with inspection out here. I appreciate that because we couldn't be there all the time. They had a lot of good ideas, and I understand this tile is very important to them, so
absolutely
don't mind that a bit. They helped us out with inspection. But when it got down to the end of this one, they saw this and said, that's not going to work because this, you would get silted in very quickly, and they're jetting that all the time.
Right.
So they showed up on this day. We're about ready to do the permit repair, and they're really upset. You can't see them, but that's the contractor looking back saying, help me. So my inspector took this picture. He called me. So I came out there. We were going to use this round structure as the drop structure, and they were convinced it would not work and it had to be square. It wasn't going to cost that much more, so we went with this square.
What? Give me the philosophy on the difference between square and round, because I'm not sure. So it's just a structure that fills up with water. So if water pours in one side, it fills up, and it runs out the other. Yeah. What's the difference between round and square?
they just were having it would not work, and I didn't want to be back out there. And the thing that was still working, so.
Do a reach.
I mean, brown doesn't fill up differently than square, does it?
Maybe it had a little bit more area around the edges, apparently.
I will make a phone call and try to get you that.
All right, I want to know the difference from brown
square. Because I'm sure there's a story.
I mean, you want to start bringing out the square glasses. I mean, here's the difference.
I would have thought it would have been a square had I not seen the picture, but I will find out.
Thank you.
Well, in the end, we got it fixed. It went on for about a month. It was just, we got a lot of rain events during the repair, so it wasn't fun. But and then they wanted, the original estimate was $14,000 they wanted for it, and we negotiated that down somewhere closer to $4,600 in the end. Good. Next on my list was the next year wind turbine project. I just wanted to make a quick note on that. You know they're coming back to replace all the components on those turbines, all 100. There is concern about road damage like we had last time, but I wanted to remind you the damage we had the first time was not caused by the components coming in. It was caused by all the rock that was hauled out there. It was just nonstop rock trucks. That's what damaged our road, and it was in the spring when they did that, so the roads were a little softer. We didn't see a lot of damage with the components, but we're going to have that same type of agreement.
Well, and that was all before, well, that was before my time, and so I didn't remember it. Well, I just remembered that there was damage. If you're comfortable that this agreement protects us as they bring those new components in.
It's the same agreement, so we were very fortunate to have, there's other times that didn't have similar experience, and they kind of were left with the bill, and we had a good agreement in place, and we're covered, so I feel pretty good about that one. Rag dry is coming.
Is it really?
Yes. Let me do a key project first on my list. I didn't have any pictures, just got a order on that. A quick update on this. Apparently these pier elevations were constructed wrong, so the contractors are in there jackhammering them all out and pouring new. Shelly, you said there's going to be an update on the news tonight on what happened out there. But that really delayed it. They were hoping to have it completed about this time, at least by fall, but this could now push into calendar year 19.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So,
let me go back.
We're too glad that's not us.
Oh, yes.
Back to Rag Rye. This is some of the mapping Leanne has put together for our social media and newspaper publications. The big concern is coming up R38. They're coming in on what we call Luther Road, E57, and coming up north. We had a meeting with emergency management, a lot of the parties involved, and the sheriff and I both agreed we cannot leave this open to traffic two ways during Rag Dry. So we're going to close the northbound R38 and leave southbound open. Originally, I pointed this out to Rag Dry when the route first came out that I had concerns with it, and they said, well, this is the way Ames wants them to come in, and they will take care of that. And at our first meeting, Ames, of course, knew nothing about that. That's how these Rag Dry things kind of work. They set the route, and we got to deal with it. But, we're doing the best we can. So we are going to close northbound, like I mentioned. Now, what's complicated that it's a different map. They'll come in here and come up north. We've now learned that the city of Ames is closing Highway 69 in town. We're still trying to get a verification on that because it came in way over bid, so they weren't going to accept the bid. But now, last I heard, they were. But Keith said he's and there's a meeting going on right now in Ames and Melissa that hopefully get clarification on that. But if they do close this, they don't think they're even going to have a detour around it. So all this traffic head northbound, they're going to have to go to the interstate to get to Ames. And we're working with the DOT to put message boards down here at 210 and Slater to warn them at that four-way intersection, go to the interstate to get north. Can't really go this way because Rag Dry's coming through that way too, and they'll be blocked off. The only gravel road connection is University. We will have that closed for our construction. Won't be able to get up that way. State Street won't help anybody because it'll be Rag Dry's coming down Mortensen. It'll be closed there as well. So Leanne's trying to get out as much on social media as she can to notify people. On the 24th, do not take R38 northbound toward the end of the day. Resonate maybe 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. before we're going to have the closure in place. But it's going to also going to work with the city. If there's any way to get a local detour out through that neighborhood in the Ken Merrill area, I don't know if that's possible. We're going to work on that, but the traffic's going to be a challenge that first day. The second day going out of town through Lincoln Way, we've never had many issues with that, so I see that going pretty smooth.
Will we close part of Lincoln Way one way or another, or will you leave it open to both ways?
We are not closing Lincoln Way. Between Ames and Nevada will all be closed down. Between Ames and Nevada, they need to get people into Gorilla, so they're going to kind of do a one-way traffic to get employees in from Ames on that, but the rest will be completely shut down in between Ames and Nevada. That, none of that's in the county jurisdiction.
Good.
Wanted to touch base on the Cambridge truck route issue. Marty, you think you had a call on that. This has come up in the past. What happens is we get a lot of trucks that head down R-70 into Cambridge. The reason for that is they can go heavier on county roads than the interstate, believe it or not.
Yeah, what did you say? It was 97,000 pounds?
Yeah, this is a snipping out of the DOT truck manual. County and non-primary roads, they can go up to this 96,000 pounds. If they have that triple axle in the back, that brings them up to seven axles. That's also for state roads at 96, but then you get the interstate primary, they have a max of 80,000 periods.
Yeah.
I don't understand why that is in place, and it's probably political. I don't know if you've gotten in calls from the committee against bigger trucks.
Yep.
That's run by the railroad. They don't want to see bigger trucks because they want to stay on the railroad.
Shocking.
So when they asked me if you want limited, I was like, well, I want to limit the loads, but I also want to see the interstate go up to match ours. But that's what creates this problem. So trucks at 96, the triples are coming down and having to go through town.
You just had a city official down there just. Yep. I knew the numbers involved and it going through on city streets and just like, what could we do on an embargo basis or redirect? And it's just like, this is what I got.
No, wanted to remind you can only embargo for a certain time period. You can't do it year round. So we couldn't put up permanent signs. And even if you tried to sign this, the truck that missed that would have to come down here and turn all the way back around and go all the way back up. And I don't know how we get their attention. That extra axle in the back, I don't see that causing a lot of extra road damage in town. So I hope it's not causing them problems. So it really is. We'll have to look into it more, but it would be a really difficult thing for the county to address. Ken Merrill Road Historic Bridge issue. This is our... It's a closed road, but it's our historic bridge back at the end of Ken Merrill, and it's the Skunk River that comes down. We've been watching this for years. This erosion eventually is going to go behind the east abutment. But what we weren't planning on is this abutment over here. Now it's getting such a bow shape. It's shooting that water out to here. It really has torn out all the big cottonwoods, and it's eroded this really bad. It's like a 15-foot straight up and down drop. We have a lot of kids going back there. There's swings hanging off the bridge and everything. We closed that further up here. I have not been back since we got the big flood, so I do not. It may have washed even further now, but we've moved that closure back. I'm in the process of working with the state on what we. They used to say we had to give these historic bridges a public access, but we have a dangerous situation here, so I need to work with the state to figure out what we actually have to do here and if we could maybe close it even further up. But I'm working on that and I'll report back.
But we don't have the legal authority to take this bridge down.
That's a good question. We can work with the historical people, and we tried to do that with that bridge down by Maxwell, and we kept getting run around, and nobody could tell us what we had the legal right to do. And I think we probably get the same thing with this.
Well, but what I can see is this bridge is coming down. I mean, tomorrow or 3 years from now or 10 years from now, this bridge is coming down.
And I assume the bridge will come down. That's the concern. The bridge will probably stay there and just get washed out both abutments, so it'll just be sitting out there. I don't know if the actual bridge will come down. So if the bridge came down, there won't be much choice. It's down, and we just, you know, pull it out of the stream.
Well, in my fear is we're going to have somebody on it when it comes down.
Yeah. It's getting to that point. We've always had deck issues with kids starting fires on the deck, and so we patch those up best we can, but it's really getting to a safety concern point where I'd like to restrict access to it if we can. I'll try to get some answers from the DOT on that. Drainage is big issues. DD20, we've been working with this railroad crossing here for almost a year now, trying to figure out what we can do there. I showed you some pictures. We televised it, had a lot of roots. We got those cleaned out, and we're able to get further with the next televising. It's really hard to see in this, but these are railroad ballast rocks, the big 3-inch rocks. There's a lot of them in there. That's telling you we got some serious issues if that's coming through, and with major cracks in the tile. At that point, it's like we've seen enough. We need to be crossing under here. So I'm recommending we set up a meeting where we can decide what to do and hopefully designate Ken Rody or somebody to.
And that's for us as Drainage District trustees, so we'll have to do that in a separate meeting.
Yes. Separate meeting for that, and the other issue is in town of Fernald. I wanted to show you this is John Hunter,
right.
I think he's called.
Yep.
He's got the issue that sits water right here. I have watched that close this year, and it hasn't had many issues. That's the most water I could find sitting there. He's got his propane tank so far down there that water gets up on that sometime, but he could move that further up. But the other issue is the district tile is the screen line, and it gets clogged with this tree right here. Goes here. We haven't had an issue with that either with all the rain, so that's good. The tile's still working fine. But we've got some estimates to replace this tile with a solid tile. It's around $5,000. So the next time we have a Drainage District trustee meeting, we'll talk about if we should proceed with that repair without doing this tile work up here. This would be county paid for tile if we did something. But this road, there's no reason to be a public road anymore. In my mind, we need to vacate that so it's not a public road, first of all, and then we need to decide if it's going to be our responsibility to tile this out. It hasn't been an issue this year, so
right, but it will, so go back to the other picture. It wouldn't be that hard to tile out from right where the pointer is over.
Correct.
And then tell me this. So
even would be too big. My concern is there's a lot of very tall, big trees right here. We have to run a tile through, and we have the same root issue. We have to tear out all these trees. That'd be a bigger issue than the tile, probably.
Yeah, but you could go with a solid tile through there, feeding into the other tile, which should help take care of the roots.
Yeah,
and then my question would be, if we tiled it and then abandoned the road, are we also abandoning the tile?
If we put a tile in?
Yeah. If we put a tile in and then we went in and abandoned the road, are we also abandoning the tile?
You would be, yes. It's not a district tile, and there's no way it would be public at that point. Go along with the road back to the adjacent property owner.
Yeah, so he would end up owning the tile if we put it in. And so I appreciate that this year it's not been as big a deal as it has before. I know he worries about the young kids like to, they use it as the Fernald swimming hole, basically, when it fills up. And he's worried about a kid drowning over there. And so I appreciate that. And I'm one that I think we ought to go ahead and see if we can do something to help get that water out of there where it doesn't just sit. But then I'm also in favor of abandoning that road back to him. And who owns the north property? Because it would go half and half, right?
Yes, I do not. There's a vacant lot here. And I do not know the owner. And before, we could not even take the tile here because there's a district crossing issue, and that's been resolved. And we've learned now we can take that water over the district.
But that's not us as Drainage District trustees. That's us as Board of Supervisors making that decision.
Right.
The one north and south is us as Drainage District trustees.
So we would be paving the east-west tile as the monies would be county monies.
It would come out of there.
Out of his budget.
Out of his budget, Darren would go in and put the tile in to drain what is kind of that eastern portion over there, just to make sure that water has nowhere to go right now. I mean, it sits there until it soaks into the ground, right? And so it would be doing what's right, because it is this old county roadway that helps contribute to the water sitting there. So it'd be doing what's right for somebody who's living there with it, but then at the same time saying, okay, county's never messing with this again. We're going in and fixing it, but then now it becomes your issue from this point on. That's us as supervisors.
That's right.
Like, if we want to deal with that, it's got to come on a future agenda. The north-south section and the possibility of going to a non-perforated tile for the tree root, so that all that landowner does not want to lose that tree.
Correct.
But we got to do something, because it's every, what, 2 or 3 years we're dealing with root problems.
So jet it every 3 to 4 years. We need to go out and jet it, or spend $5,000, but that $5,000 would be split just in this sub-district, so that would be split between different all residents, so we might have some upset residents that get
Well,
even on a non-perf pipe, you still have no guarantee you won't get the root infiltration. It's just a lazy.
We put like a PVC or something there, it's pretty solid.
Yeah. Like crack. I'm just quoting Steve Coldmouse.
That's the first mistake right there. Round or square? That's what I want to know.
I will have that answer.
We also had in DD20, we had that. Well, that was DD32. We had the 600 foot of tower replacement. Picture of that. So that is completed. Lastly, we had a new hire, Nick Carriage, taking over the tile job. He had a fairly easy start, but now.
too late. He's in now.
There's no escape. I don't think there's a pile in the county that's working properly right now, according to the public. So it takes time for those districts to drain, and he's very up to speed. When he was able to hit the ground running, I didn't think we'd be able to find somebody with this kind of experience. I'm very pleased with how things are going pretty well.
And when he's got the same kind of persona that Dave had, where he can, he walks on the property and the farmers are going to feel pretty good.
And the last issue, this just came up. I wanted to point it out. I'm still talking to the landowner. This is the Ames Country Club. There was a new lot that was put in right here, so I don't know if that's being built yet or not. But there's rumble strips in the pavement. Those are difficult things to get removed once you put them in. That's why I'm always reluctant to put something like this in, like stop signs or anything. Once you put them in, it's very difficult to take them back out, because you kind of take a lot of liability on by doing that. We've been playing phone tag, but I believe his request is going to be he wants these removed.
Is that 190th?
Yeah, that's 190th.
So you've got a new building there, a new home there, and they're complaining about the noise of the rumble strip?
There's no home yet. They haven't started construction.
Ah, okay.
Yet.
So they're being proactive.
Who bought that, I guess, is.
I point out these blue boxes are the rumble strips. This one was actually filled in right away, and the DOT standard for rumble strips has changed. It's eliminated this one. So it's just a two-system rumble strip now, so that's another reason why that one was able to be filled in. But these two are going to be a little more difficult to get out. It was put in about 20 years ago. This intersection had some accidents.
And so, yeah, let's go to the safety factor. I mean, they were put in as a safety factor, and that's George Washington Carver, correct? That's, all right. So we've got stop signs there. I do, from personal experience, having happened to drive there, I used to do it a lot. Now I never seem to get Kiwanis, but up there on Fridays. But you've got the brewery and the winery that's just off the screen to the left, to the northwest, if you will. You've got increased housing development from south of 190th on the west side of the road down to, we've been talking about the problem at Cameron School Road there, and we're thinking about actually taking out rumble strips, which are a safety factor. I'm not for that. I know this is not on the agenda today, but
And let me just correct.
Yeah.
We're not thinking about taking them out. Darren's just expressing to us that he's got a landowner
okay.
who is going to make a request, And what I'm hearing Darren say is, forget about what we say in this.
Right.
Legally, there's a problem with us taking out existing rental restrictions. It puts undue liability on the county if, in fact, you do that. So I just, of course, I didn't take it as anything was coming to us. It's just something Darren's dealing with.
Thank you, Darren. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Blood pressure, go back down. Okay.
Yeah. Lee, that is all I have. Any questions?
City of Collins get a hold of you about some of their flooding concerns. At their Thursday council meeting that they were having some issues, that they have a floodplain going through their city, as they've done some, between the 65, the railroad bridge, portion, construction brought some new issues to the town on drainage, and they suspect they've got some private and tile issues in addition to the county tile that goes through their town, and they just want to know why stuff was what it was, and they said a good place to start was calling their engineer and having you guys come down and visualize. So if they have it, they have it.
We're from Nitt. Wait for the call.
Darren, great job.
Thank you, Darren.
Yeah. Glad you're back in the country.
Yeah, again. Welcome back.
Yeah, you can turn your passport into Alyssa.
Not going anywhere anymore.
All right, my favorite part of the agenda, other reports, quarterly financial report for the final quarter of FY18.
Right.
Welcome back. This is Mark Lee.
So we ended the year. I think you probably figured that out. I did update your budget books. I either told you or you were here when I did it. So
one of us was pushing you to get it done.
One of you was pushing you to get it done. Correct. Cross top your list, right?
That's right. It's like Christmas for me.
Right. As you can see, we ended the year at 88%, just about 88% of our expenditures from the amended budgets. Our ending fund balance for the general and supplemental came in at like 34, which is about 6% over budgeted, which is awesome. But I'm amending how much of that back in today, at the end of this month. I am coming to you with a fund balance resolution here shortly. End of this month, I've got it. I'm going to put it on the agenda, I think. And just a note to you guys that 1.6 is still in there. I did get confirmation from conservation. They have not spent any of those dollars yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're still sitting there.
Fund balance, first time ever when you combine all our fund balances that were ended a fiscal year over $20 million.
Right.
In fact, we have $22
million.
And like I said, first time ever that Story County has had more. Now, we took care of some of that with some of the changes, amendments we made in the FY19 budget. But still, a pretty healthy place to be when you're dealing with things like a new roof for the Justice Center and some of the unforeseen things that we have coming.
Right. Yeah, a reminder that we're not hoarding the money. Okay. We're not trying to go
look around. Just being responsible.
Right. Well, just moving around. Yep.
Right. Our real fund came in about 4% higher than we had anticipated, which is good. And then the secondary roads fund, it did get down to 44%, which is good. Still about 20% higher than we budgeted, but that was good. Revenues, not bad there. We budgeted pretty appropriately on revenues since we are at 99.6%.
Good job.
Yeah.
$42 million in and $40 million out. That's pretty solid.
Yeah. Lisa, on going back to the first page, the TIF fund, we show $266,000 in there right now. Okay, and I don't show it being assigned or committed.
It's actually restricted.
Thank you.
And that those dollars are going to be moved to the urban renewal project fund. That's just where they end of the year, and I need to transfer.
Okay.
Which I'm also bringing a transfer resolution to you guys for what we budgeted for transfers, though.
So. We're seeing you a lot.
Well, I think I'm going to wait until the end of the month and do a one shot everything.
So a couple notes for us. In FY10-11, Story County actually spent $42,369,364, so 42.4. I'm happy to report that since that time, we've not spent that much. And in fact, the highest we've been is this year, $40,400,000. We're doing, you know, you just mentioned, Loris, we're not hoarding the money. We're just doing a really, really good job watching the taxpayers' dollars. And when you think about things, you think about the reality that at that point we were only spending about $5 million a year in secondary roads, and now we've budgeted $6.8 million next year for secondary roads. We're putting our money where our priorities are, but still watching every dollar really closely. Lisa, I'm so appreciative that here we are July 10th, and you've pulled all this together. We're able to look at all of it. And see where we are, because that's the way you manage stuff like this. Is you know where you are, you know where you're trying to head, and then you manage it as you go. And so thank you. And great job. I love these numbers. Questions or comments, Marty or Horace?
I've already said it. I think this is a reflection of good fiscal stewardship. Yes, I do echo Horace's concern that we do have some sizable balances around the banks for the county government. We have commits on that, those dollars, and they will move for things that serve again.
Right, but you've got to maintain enough so that you can respond if there's an unforeseen issue that comes up.
Absolutely.
I've got one more factoid.
What?
Here's my other factoid. Actual expenditures, FY09, FY10, FY11 for Story County, $121.2 million. $121.2 million, 9, 10, 11. 16, 17, 18, $115.5 million. $6 million less over a three-year period when comparing those two.
And is the CLP, when Community Life was open, is that factored into those?
Sure, but we keep going down that road.
Right.
That is entirely about services provided to the people of Story County. And the reality is in mental health services, so those services that CLP provided,
right,
there has never been a time that Story County has offered more mental health services to more people than we do today. So those dollars that we're spending, which ultimately you spend dollars to provide services to the people of Story County, we're providing more services to more people today than we were at that point.
And I'm not arguing that. I'm just taking a look at the actual numbers that you said versus the numbers of another period. That one of the factors about why those first numbers were higher is we had more people on the payroll, right?
Sure. So you're arguing that we were being more inefficient with the dollars in providing services to the people of Story County. Okay.
I'll let you take that where you want. I just wanted to point out the CLP thing.
Point out the CLP thing, and I'll point out that those services that CLP provided, we're doing more for more people than we were then. So in essence, if that's the road you want to go down, that's fine, but we're providing more services to more people for fewer dollars. That's perfect. Anything else, Lisa?
Okay.
Great job. All right, let's talk inventory. Not excited about this.
Come on now.
Well, turns out no department has an elected officials are really excited about it either when we say check these and make sure you have them all. So any item over $500 purchased throughout the year, and yes, we're going to leave it at $500. We update and maintain an ongoing inventory list. Inventory numbers are assigned. We did have to buy new inventory stickers. When did we start using those, Shell? Just recently. Anyway, they don't stick very good, we've just determined. But they are what they are. Our office went out and did verifications after sending out to all the departments that we wanted them to update their lists. Some departments do that better than others.
Mm-hmm.
Some departments have less to inventory than others. Overall, we ended up with five items that were not found out of 148, so it's 3.3%.
Impressive.
Mm-hmm. That's actually the lowest it's been, and I was pretty tickled about that. Yeah, it is awesome. And then mainly it's items that have been destroyed, have been gotten rid of, have been whatever without thinking to send an inventory card and remove it from inventory.
Sure, almost always a paperwork issue,
yeah,
rather than we're actually missing something.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm the I don't go out and do them myself. I actually highlight the items, and I'm kind of strategic when I highlight items to see what might have walked off and things like that.
I think it's great that we got it down to five. Any questions on inventory?
None.
Oh, good. All right, thanks, Lisa. Public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda, or if we want to revisit something that's on today's agenda, that's fine too. Anybody wish to do so, come on up. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, liaison assignments, Martin.
Pass.
Lawrence.
I am going to the city council tonight. All right. To aid the city council for the, well, it's just for the transportation improvement plan. It's where I show up and do the second. Although we've had a couple other elected officials show up, and so maybe they can do the second tonight.
Right.
Okay, so, yeah.
Well, have a good meeting. If not, I take a motion. If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
Move
to
approve.
Aye.
So moved.
I'll second that.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
You are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.